Edward Anglesey was a bit of a shock the first time. He was a head, a pair of arms, and a disconcertingly intense blue stare. The rest of him was mere detail, enclosed in a wheeled machine. Biophysicist originally, Viken had told Cornelius, studying atmospheric spores at Earth Station when he was still a young man. Accident crushed him up, nothing below his chest will ever work again. Snappish type, you have to go slow with him. Seated on a wisp of a stool in the S-projector control room, Cornelius realized that Viken had been soft-pedaling the truth. Anglesey ate as he talked, gracelessly, letting the chair's tentacles wipe up after him. "Got to," he explained. "This stupid place is officially on Earth time, GMT. I've got to be here whenever Joe wakes up, ready to take him over."
"Couldn't you have someone spell you?" asked Cornelius.
"Bah!" Anglesey stabbed a piece of prot and waggled it at the other man. Since it was native to him, he could spit out English, the common language of the station, with unmeasured ferocity. "Look here, you ever done therapeutic esping? Not just listening in, even communication, but actual pedagogic control?"
"No, not I. It requires a certain natural talent, like yours."
Cornelius smiled. His ingratiating little phrase was swallowed without being noticed by the scoured face opposite him.
"I take it you mean cases like, re-educating the nervous system of a palsy child?"
"Yes, yes. Good enough example. Anyone ever tried to suppress the child's personality? Take him over on the most literal sense?"
"Good God, no!
Even as a scientific experiment?" Anglesey grinned. "Has any S-projector operator ever poured on the juice and swamped the child's brain with his own thoughts? Come on, Cornelius. I won't snitch on you."
"Well, it's out of my line, you understand."
The sonicist looked carefully away, found a bland meter face, and screwed his eyes to it.
I have heard something about, yes. There were attempts in some pathological cases to, pull through, break down the patient's delusions by sheer force.
And it didn't work," said Anglesey. He laughed. "It can't work. Not even on a child, let alone an adult with a fully developed personality. Well, it took a decade of refinement, didn't it, before the machine was debugged to the point to where a psychiatrist could even listen in without the normal variations between his pattern of thought and the patient's? Without that variation setting up interference, scrambling the very thing you wanted to study? The machine has to make automatic compensations for the differences between individuals. We can't bridge the differences between species. If someone else is willing to cooperate, you can gently guide his thinking, and that's all. If you try to seize control of another brain, a brain with its own background of experience, its own ego, you risk your very sanity. The other brain will fight back instinctively. A fully developed, matured, hardened human personality is just too complex for outside control. It has too many resources, too much hell its subconscious can call to its defense if its integrity is threatened. Blazes, man, we can't even master our own minds, let alone someone else's." Anglesey's cracked voice tirade broke off. He sat brooding at the instrument panel, tapping the console of his mechanical mother.
"Well," said Cornelius after a while.
He should not, perhaps, have spoken, but he found it hard to remain mute. There was too much silence, 500 million miles of it from here to the sun. If you closed your mouth 5 minutes at a time, the silence began creeping in like fog.
"Well," gibbed Anglesey, "so our pseudo-Jovian, Joe, has a physically adult brain. The only reason I can control him is that his brain has never been given a chance to develop its own ego. I am Joe. From the moment he was born into consciousness, I have been there. The psi-beam sends me all his sense data and sends him back my motor nerve impulses. Nevertheless, he has an excellent brain, and its cells are recording every trace of experience, even as yours and mine. His synapses have assumed the topography, which is my personality pattern. Anyone else taking him over from me would find it was like an attempt to oust me from my own brain. It couldn't be done. To be sure, he doubtless has only a rudimentary set of Anglesey memories. I do not, for example, repeat trigonometric theorems while controlling him, but he has enough to be potentially a distinct personality. As a matter of fact, whenever he wakes up from sleep, there's usually a lag of a few minutes while I sense the change through my normal psi faculties and get the amplifying helmet adjusted. I have a bit of a struggle. I feel almost a resistance until I've brought his mental currents completely into phase with mine.
Merely dreaming has been enough of a different experience to... Anglesey didn't bother to finish his sentence.
I see, murmured Cornelius. Yes, it's clear enough. In fact, it's astonishing that you can have such total contact with a being of such alien metabolism.
I won't for much longer, said the Espen sarcastically. Unless you can correct whatever's burning out those K-tubes. I don't have an unlimited supply of spares.
I have some working hypotheses, said Cornelius. But there's so little known about psi-beam transmission. I mean, is the velocity infinite or merely very great? Is the beam strength actually independent of distance? How about the possible effects of transmission? Oh, through the degenerate matter in the Jovian core. Good Lord, a planet where water is a heavy mineral and hydrogen a metal? What do we know?
We're supposed to find out, snapped Anglesey. That's what this whole project is for. Knowledge.
Bull.
Almost, he spat on the floor.
Apparently, what little we've learned doesn't even get through to people. Hydrogen is still a gas where Joe lives. He'd have to dig down a few miles to reach the solid phase. And I'm expected to make a scientific analysis of Jovian conditions.
Cornelius waited it out, letting Anglesey storm on while he himself turned over the problem of K-tube oscillations.
They don't understand back on Earth. Even here they don't. Sometimes I think they refuse to understand. Joe's down there without much more than his bare hands. He, I, we, started with no more knowledge than that he could possibly eat the local life. He has to spend nearly all his time hunting for food. It's a miracle he's come as far as he has in those few weeks. Made a shelter, grown familiar with the immediate region, begun on metallurgy, hydrurgy, whatever you want to call it. What more do they want me to do, for crying into beer?
Yes, yes, mumbled Cornelius. Yes, I...
Anglesey raised his white, bony face. Something filmed over his eyes.
What?
Began Cornelius.
Shut up!
Anglesey whipped a chair around, groping for the helmet, slapped it down over his skull. Joe's waking up! Get out of here!
But if you'll only let me work while he sleeps, how can I...
Anglesey snarled and threw a wrench at him. It was a feeble toss, even in low gravity. Cornelius backed toward the door. Anglesey was turning in the S-projector. Suddenly he jerked.
Cornelius!
What's it? The sonicist tried to run back, overdid it, and skidded into a heap at the end of the panel.
K-tube again!
Anglesey yanked off the helmet. It must have hurt like blazes, having a mental squeal build up uncontrolled and amplified in your brain. But he said merely,
change it for me. Fast! And then get out of here and leave me alone. Joe didn't wake up by himself. Something crawled into the dugout with me. I'm in trouble down there.
It had been a hard day's work, and Joe slept heavily. He did not wake until the hands closed on his throat. For a moment then, he knew only a crazy, smothering wave of panic. He thought he was back on Earth Station, floating in null G at the end of a cable, while a thousand frosty stars haloed the planet before him. He thought the great I-beam had broken from the moorings and started toward him, slowly, but with all the inertia of its cold tons, spinning and shimmering in the Earth's light. And the only sound, himself screaming and screaming in his helmet, trying to break from the cable, the beam nudged him ever so gently, but it kept on moving. He moved with it. He was crushed against the station wall. Nuzzled into it, his mangled suit frothed as it tried to seal its wounded self. There was blood mingled with the foam. His blood. Joe roared. His convulsive reaction tore the hands off his neck and sent a black shape spinning across the dugout. It struck the wall thunderously, and the lamp fell to the floor and went out. Joe stood in darkness, breathing hard, aware in a vague fashion that the wind had died from a shriek to a low snarling while he slept. The thing he had tossed away mumbled in pain and crawled along the wall. Joe felt through lightnessness after his club. Something else scrabbled. The tunnel. They were coming through the tunnel. Joe groped blind to meet them. His heart drummed thickly and his nose drank an alien stench. The thing that emerged as Joe's hands closed on it was only about half his size, but it had six monstrously taloned feet and a pair of three-fingered hands that reached after his eyes. Joe cursed, lifting it while it writhed and dashed it to the floor. It screamed and he heard bones splinter.
Come on, then!
Joe arched his back and spat at them like a tiger menaced by giant caterpillars. They flowed through his tunnel and into the room. A dozen of them entered while he wrestled one that had curled itself around his shoulders and anchored its sinuous body with claws. They pulled at his legs, trying to crawl up on his back.
He struck out with claws of his own, with his tail, rolled over and went down beneath a heap of them, and stood up with the heap still clinging to him. They swayed in darkness. The legged seething of them struck the dugout wall. It shivered, a rafter cracked, the roof came down. Anglesey stood in a pit among broken ice plates under the wan light of sinking Ganymede. He could see now that the monsters were black in color and that they had heads big enough to accommodate some brains. Less than a human, but probably more than apes. There were a score of them or so. They struggled from beneath the wreckage and flowed at him with the same shrieking malice.
Why? Baboon reaction, thought Anglesey somewhere in the back of himself. See the stranger, fear the stranger, hate the stranger, kill the stranger.
His chest heaved, pumping air through a raw throat. He yanked a whole rafter to him, snapped it in half, and twirled the iron hard wood. The nearest creature got its head bashed in, the next had its back broken. The third was hurled with shattered ribs into a fourth, and they went down together. Joe began to laugh. It was getting to be fun.
Yo, tiger!
He ran across the icy ground toward the pack. They scattered, howling. He hunted them until the last one had vanished into the forest. Panting, Joe looked at the dead. He himself was bleeding. He ached. He was cold and hungry, and his shelter had been wrecked. But he'd whipped them. He had a sudden impulse to beat his chest and howl. For a moment, he hesitated. Why not? Anglesey threw back his head and bayed victory at the dim shield of Ganymede. Thereafter, he went to work. First, build a fire in the lee of the spaceship, which was little more now than a hill of corrosion. The monster pack cried in darkness in the broken ground. They had not given up on him. They would return. He tore a haunch off one of the slain and took a bite. Pretty good. Better yet, if properly cooked. Hey, they'd made a big mistake calling his attention to their existence. He finished breakfast while Ganymede slipped under the western ice mountains. It would be morning soon. The air was almost still, and a flock of pancake-shaped sky skimmers, as Anglesey called them, went overhead, burnished copper color in the first pale dawn streaks. Joe rummaged in the ruins of his hut until he had recovered the water-smelting equipment. It wasn't harmed. That was the first order of business. Melt some ice and cast it in the molds of axe, knife, saw, and hammer that he had painfully prepared. Under Jovian conditions, methane was a liquid that you drank, and water was a dense, hard mineral. It would make good tools. Later on, he would try alloying it with other materials. Next. Yes. To hell with the dugout, he could sleep in the open again for a while. Make a bow, set traps, be ready to massacre the black caterpillars when they attacked him again. There is a chasm not far from here, going down a long way toward the bitter cold of the metallic hydrogen strata. A natural icebox. A place to store several weeks' worth of meat his enemies would supply. This would give him leisure to... Oh, a hell of a lot. Joe laughed exultantly and lay down to watch the sunrise. It struck him afresh how lovely a place this was. See how the small, brilliant spark of the sun swam up out of the eastern fog banks, colored dusky purple and veined with rose and gold. See how the light strengthened until the great hollow arch of the sky became one shout of radiance. See how the light spilled warm and living over a broad, fair land, the million square miles of rustling low forests and wave-blinking lakes and feather-plumed hydrogen geysers. And see how the ice mountains of the west flashed like blued steel. Anglesey drew the morning wind deep into his lungs and shouted with a boy's joy.